All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Greetings from the Garden State. I'm your host, Mike Cam. We're coming from the home studio, which we normally don't do. But if you listen to the show frequently, you know that this is how we have been doing our New Jersey Veterans Series episodes. And this is no different. So we have another episode of our New Jersey Veterans Series today, which we've been doing throughout the month of November. This will be our fourth episode of this series. And today we have Brian Consoli. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good to have you on. So Bill Anthes, who was our first New Jersey Veterans Series guest and then co-host of the next two, introduced us. And outside of maybe like the 3 minutes that we talked prior to this and, you know, going through like a little bit of a headphone thing, we haven't talked at all. So I'm going to learn all about you over the course of this episode, along with our listeners. So I'm very excited to kind of, you know, unpack you and all that kind of stuff. So just so the people know, what branch in the military did you serve in?
I served in the Navy, 2011 to 2015. And awesome. I served as a Naval Chaplain Candidate Officer in the Naval Chaplain Corps.
Awesome. All right, great. So the people that listen to these episodes already know, and I kind of filled you in before we got started. I just want to make sure that they knew what branch you were in. And then that way we can kind of progress. You're our first Navy veteran. Fun fact. So there's a little feather in your cap for that. So I think the way we've been doing these so far has been pre-military life, life during the military, and life after the military. So we're going to kind of learn a little bit about you before getting into the military. So because we asked this, it's a New Jersey based show, and we asked this to pretty much every guest we have. Are you born and raised in Jersey?
I am born and raised in in Brick. So good old fashioned Brick Tucky, Ocean County, Pine Barrens, piney guy. So
yeah,
grew up in rural south coastal New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah, we did an episode. This is actually going to wind up coming out before that in Brick. And I didn't realize like how rural Brick was until I went down there. We recorded on a farm, so I should have known that it was going to be like a little bit rural. But yeah. And then are you still in that general area right now?
I am. I grew up, I was born and raised in Brick and left for a little while to go do some service work and schooling out in Philadelphia. My wife and I lived in Philadelphia for a bit. And then when it was time to have kids, we moved back to Brick. And then my office today is in Monmouth County, about 15 minutes north.
Awesome. Yeah. I spend a lot of time in Monmouth County because Asbury Park's in Monmouth County, right? I got that right. Yeah. So I'm there a lot. So yeah. That's why I'm down that way a lot. But so born and raised in Jersey, in Brick, still living in Brick with a little bit of a hiatus, but I've even had a hiatus and I do a whole show about Jersey. But so maybe take me through like early life, like what were some of like the activities that you were involved in, sports, other stuff that interested you. Take me through some of that.
I'm a big combat sports guy. Okay. So born and raised kind of rural Jersey, walking, hiking the Pine Barrens, loved the outdoors, always did as a kid. Got involved in boxing, fighting, soccer, fighting on the soccer field.
That doesn't happen a lot, fighting on a soccer field. Because, I mean, like you see it on TV, guys just take the flop now and it's like, come on.
Right. Back in the day, we settled it like gentlemen.
yeah, little fisticuffs.
but life's good. Grew up with mom and dad down there. Brick was pretty quiet growing up, so had a lot of like room to run. Super active. Always had come from a long line of veterans. So my grandfather Savario served World War II in the Navy. Most of my uncles, my other grandfather served, and then my father served in the Vietnam War with the Army. So even as a kid, you know, I kind of wanted to go and join and serve in some capacity. I realized early on I had a heart for people. So, thought that maybe helping people or joining the military one day was going to be in my future.
Yeah. Was that something? So that was actually going to be my next question. So great segue. It was going to be, do you have family members in the military? So when you, obviously you said you come from a lot, there's a lot of family members in your family that served, and then you had this inclination to serve. Was that something that was like a positive reception, or was it kind of like, all right, maybe we should do something else? Maybe take me through like that kind of like family dynamic. Cause I feel like some people that I've talked to, whether through this show or other veterans that we're going to wind up having on the show eventually, it's like, if they come from a long line of veterans, it's sometimes like the mom is like, come on, like another kid in the military, like I can't handle that, like that kind of thing. Or it's, you know, a very well received and they know that it's part of like that person's journey. So maybe kind of like, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, good question. We're very pro American household. We're very libertarian. We're very pro freedom. Pro doing the research and making your own decisions in life. So my parents gave me the keys to kind of make my own decisions. And my father and mother were always supportive. I do have to say that I got into a fair bit of trouble in my teen years, mostly associated with those good old fashioned fisticuffs. But I did have, you know, some trouble. And my thoughts of initially joining the military in my early teen years were kind of thwarted by some of that, because going through high school and then coming out of high school, I was kind of in a bad spot. And it delayed that path, which I'm happy to say, you know, kind of led me on the journey I was on today. But
right.
I had to get over that hump. So parents were always supportive, but they had their hands full with me kind of making decisions into those teen years.
Yeah. Just combustible elements, I guess, just happening out there in rural Brick County or Monmouth County.
Yeah. I did well in school. I did good in sports, but I had a bit of a rebellious side, that kind of wanted independence and adventure. So,
yeah.
I spent my teen years kind of getting in and out of little bits of trouble here and there. I muscled through. My teen years are when most young men enlist. We're delayed a little bit by kind of rectifying those issues from the past.
Right. Right. So, so you mentioned kind of like delaying that process. So after high school, I guess, what was like the next step? College, or was it eventually enlisting? What was that? What was that process?
Yeah. So, post high school, I was a little unsure. I actually got into a bit of trouble. I got arrested, for drugs and for, fighting and for, you know, driving around drunk like an idiot, like young angry men sometimes do.
Sure.
And so that was the moment. I was at 18, and that was the moment where I kind of had a bit of an epiphany and a bit of a paradigm shift. I met my current my wife, then my current yeah. wife, my future ex-wife, you know what
yeah.
I'm
saying. right. Yeah. Yeah.
I met Caroline, when I was 18, and, I was in a bad way. And, I happened to actually, you know, hang out with her and her family, because mine was kind of, we were at odds at the moment. And they took me to church one day, and, I don't know what it was. I don't know if I was desperate enough or downtrodden enough or depressed enough or sick enough of being sick and tired at the time, but I perked my ears up a little bit, and I at least heard that there was hope for my life. That no matter how bad you screwed up, you know, at 18, there was opportunities for renewal and rebirth. And I started taking my life a little bit more seriously then.
Yeah.
So, I didn't go to college. I made it a point to, invest time in myself, invest time in my family, you know, for a few years causing chaos. And I didn't go to college until I was 21.
Okay.
So from 18 to 21, I stayed home. I worked. I worked the graveyard shift at ShopRite and Brick, stocking shelves from 11 a.m. to 7:30 in the morning. I went a little bit to part-time school to try to figure out maybe what I wanted to do. So I took some business classes. I took some social work classes. I took some, you know, psychology classes. And I had something in my heart that was calling out to maybe step up and help people. So
yeah.
21, I started studying. I went to a 4-year school, and I did my first undergrad degree, which was a bachelor's in science with a specialization and focus on counseling and social work.
Okay.
And in tandem, so from 18 to that time and forward, for about 8 years, I worked in and out of the social work industry. So I worked in the Philadelphia public school system, doing one-on-ones with kids and working on child study team. I worked in my local church, doing counseling work with young people and their families. My wife and I, who was my then girlfriend, right, and then future wife at the time, we had the opportunity to travel the globe and help people in India and Mexico and do humanitarian work. That was just really kind of cool and enlightening. So I spent a few years post high school really kind of focusing on the things that brought me life.
Right.
And one of those things that brought me life was dedicating myself in a life of service to others. So I made a decision, to go to school for social work. And I served in that capacity for a long time, right up until that 2015 range. So from 18 to military, I was involved in counseling and social work and mentoring young people to try to be the best version of themselves.
Right. So I find that very interesting. And this, a similar story has been told kind of on these episodes prior with some of the veterans that we've had on so far. But I think it's very interesting kind of coming from, you said that rebellious, causing chaos, getting into trouble, and then going to help people. Obviously, talking to you right now, I would never guess that past was your past. But take me maybe through, was there a reason why you went down that particular path? Because maybe you didn't have someone to talk to like that when you were going through that, those bits of trouble. Was it something that you looked for and then you kind of were like, hey, I needed this. So now I'm going to, give back or prevent that from happening to someone else. Was that kind of the process? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, no. I had great men step into my life. With strong men that I know today. One of my partners in business today is one of them. And, they stepped up and showed me what a man lived like, right? That he had integrity, that his word, right, meant something, that a life lived in sacrifice was not only a virtuous life, it was a heroic life. So I had good examples that stepped in my teen years and that brought me under their wing. And these were business professionals and these were other men in ministry or in counseling that I respected. So that arc kind of went that direction because I was lined up at the time to maybe study business because business was an interest of mine. And my father became an economist and I love math and nerdy stuff like statistics.
Oh my God, stats. I took a stats class in college and it was a nightmare.
I chose the path that I genuinely believed in my heart of hearts would make me happy.
Yeah.
And would make others happy too. So it just kind of went in that direction. So I do have to say that in the process, I did struggle a bit in my 20s, early 20s, 21, 22. I started struggling a lot with depression. And then I don't know if it was the, you know, working two full-time social work jobs.
Yeah.
You know, plus other things, I was starting to hit a little bit of burnout, and by a little bit, I mean a lot. So I was working in Philadelphia. I was doing social work in the Philadelphia public school system. I was also working full-time, right? Doing humanitarian work and counseling. And that drive and that kind of, the purpose was fading, but
right.
You know, what happened was I actually met somebody who was a military chaplain.
Okay.
And, he gave me a book, and that was, Lieutenant Kerry Cash, Johnny Cash's son. Oh. He served, right with the Marines and, right on the initial push into Iraq. And he told his story of, his bond with his Marines and what he saw and the good things that were happening in their lives. And honestly, I read the book and it just reignited me. I was like, wait a second, there's a way to kind of go and help young people. And by then I had had the experience. I had probably had 8 years of vocational, experience that qualified me for that position.
Right.
So, I started looking into it, and then, you know, I subsequently found myself in Naval Chaplain Corps. So,
right, yeah. So, okay. So, this is an interesting. All of this is interesting so far. That's like one of my big verbal tics is like, this is interesting. One of the things that I like, but I do find it interesting. So, you are going through this process, and we just talked a little bit about how early on in life, you know, surrounded by members of the military in your family, always kind of had like that feeling that was going to be part of your life at some point. And then, you find almost like this new path that, kind of like makes you feel whole, I guess, at the beginning, kind of like lose the fire a little bit as you're kind of progressing through that. And then kind of coming back to something that was something that you had felt in kind of like almost, I want to say like a previous life, you know what I mean? Because like, in my opinion, just hearing your story so far, it's almost like you're two different people up to this age, whatever you are, like 22, 23, whatever you said. Was that something that was like, I mean, I know you said that it was, you know, the telling the story and like all that kind of stuff, Kerry Cash, telling that story kind of like ignited you a little bit more, but was there a hesitation being that you had kind of like almost kind of pulling on something from old Brian and putting it into new Brian to kind of like help new Brian get to another level?
Yeah. You know, I think my story is like always climbing to different levels, honestly. Yeah. I like to work on my deficiencies, and I just saw it as a new challenge. You know, I also was really kind of, you know, just really burnt out on what I was doing. Social workers should be paid millions of dollars a year for what they do.
Yeah.
And you know, I was smoked, and, I just said, hey, like, I'm going to give it a shot. So, I went to the Naval Chaplain Recruiter and went through the process of getting my SF-86 done and all that stuff. And, I took a commission and, had the absolute honor and privilege to, go to Rhode Island and meet wonderful people. And got the ability to serve and be present with young people and meet them kind of on the road of life.
Right.
Quite an experience.
Yeah, for sure. So can you take us through maybe like a little bit of what is entailed in the job of someone in the Naval Chaplain Corps?
Yeah. The Naval Chaplaincy dates back to the origins of the Navy. So 1775 is actually the founding. And the Naval Chaplains, all of the Armed Services Chaplains actually are the protector of the First Amendment. And so they represent and protect the First Amendment rights of every service member. So they provide ministry, religious services, they facilitate and care for everyone. And they advise on the to the command about you know issues regarding religion, First Amendment rights, and those sorts of freedoms.
Okay, all right. So and you were there. You served from 2011 to 2015. Kind of take me through like your experience. I know we said before we started recording, like you obviously can't share exact stories of people that you know worked with, but I'm more curious anyway on kind of your experience. And did that fix the burnout? Did that relight the fire a little bit for you?
Yeah, very insightful question. So I can say this, my experience in the military in that capacity that I had the privilege to serve, I was able to meet not only right, Marines and sailors and soldiers, Coast Guardsmen that you know the average touch point made all the difference. The capacity in which I was able to serve in the military was what I had always been looking for when I was a younger man.
Right.
There's something very interesting, right, when you wear the cross on your lapel. And that doesn't mean a lot to the average young person, right? The average Marine that I met, or sailor, you know, that I visited in a hospital. What meant everything in the world is when they saw that, they knew that they had someone that was on their side, that advocated for them, and that was going to see them from point A to point B. So my experience was I got to do some short-term solution-based counseling stuff. And I got to, more importantly, meet people in the exchange or that would come up to me and say, "Hey, chaps, I need help. Can you help me with this?" And that's disarming, because when you're working as a counselor, or when you're working as a minister, or when you're working in social work, you're asking questions to people to try to get answers, and they're generally paying you for service.
Right.
In the military, it's not that, you know, people would come and find you because you're a safe place for them. So my experience in that way was beautiful. It ignited everything within me that always wanted to help people, because there was never a shortage of people to help, right? People were at a variety of levels of conflict that I met throughout the years, from right extreme scenarios and trauma that they experienced that they wanted to talk about or didn't want to talk about, to suicidal ideations or just, "Hey chaps, I got a problem with my kid. Can you help me?" You know, and every time being able to kind of step into that gap and facilitate and care for the Marines and sailors that I served with was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Yeah. No, I love that. So trying to approach this question the right way. So kind of going through that and having those experiences and working with those people, I mean, like, cause we've talked a little bit about on the show already in the rest of our series, you know, like, and you had mentioned a couple scenarios where like, you know, dealing with certain things like that. Is it because you don't have to ask the questions, but you're also dealing with people that are going through certain things in some cases that the normal Joe like me would never experience? Like, I most likely will never experience combat in my life. And, you know, people have, and that's not necessarily like a normal human thing to go through. So, I mean, I feel like it's almost kind of two different challenges. Like, you're dealing with stuff that might be on more of an extreme level, but also people that are willing to come up to you and talk, so you don't actually have to start prying and like whittling away at like what's actually bothering them. So is that kind of like a new experience, I guess, almost, and kind of like maybe any challenges that presented themselves with that?
You know, there's one, you know,
I know that's a tough question to answer.
Answer. I'll answer.
Just do your like best. This. I'll do my best over here.
Right. I'll answer it like this. The chaplains in a particular, and you know, the chaplain corps is in a particular unique position because there are basically very serious protections given to confidentiality under the First Amendment that actually harken back to the secrecy held between Roman Catholic priests and the adherent during confession. So it's interesting that the First Amendment covers religious freedom of all service members. That is actually covered to the most, you know, expansive degree. So they're basically, you know, counselors, social workers in the military have reporting responsibilities, and chaplains do not technically. Now, again, it's a kind of like a legal moral issue, but I can say, you know, with confidence that anything I've ever talked with anybody about, it never got to the point where anybody, right, was not willing to disclose, right, or share with someone, or go to the doctor, right, or see additional help, right, that was above and beyond what right, me or another chaplain could facilitate.
Right. I think that was a good way to answer that. Yeah. Sorry. Usually I ask better questions. Okay. So the other question that I do have is more like an organizational question. So you're in the chaplain corps, obviously the military is a entity that attracts people from a lot of different backgrounds, different walks of life, different parts of the country, different religions. So is that like, are you dealing with everybody? Is that kind of how that works? Or are there different kind of, you know, people to handle different parts of those individual experiences?
Yeah, good question. So the chaplains are there to protect and facilitate, and they facilitate for all.
Okay.
Although when you when you join the chaplaincy, right, you join under the brand of your respective religion.
Okay.
And then there are DOD approved endorsers. So you're endorsed by basically your particular line of faith, sect, church, denomination, whatever that is, that is a DOD endorser. So I had some really, really great and kind of equally amazing experiences with the chaplains that I served with. And they were from a variety of backgrounds. So, right. I served in the capacity of like a non-denominational, right, just kind of more generic Christian. I served with Roman Catholics that served on the same team as, the Pope in the Vatican. I had one, chaplain that served, part-time, a reservist similar to myself. And, he served in the capacity, full-time capacity as chaplain of Harvard Divinity School.
Oh, okay.
I served with, Orthodox, Jewish rabbi, and I served with the first, ever, Buddhist chaplain. So,
wow.
Now basically the military just enables, for there to be right enough chaplains. I think there's about somewhere between 700 or 800 in the Navy, that cover everybody for the most part. Right. So you have your Christians, which are basically non-denominational or Catholic. You have Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, covering everybody. But they enable it so that there's chaplains that facilitate for the demographic that serve.
I gotcha. And I think that would be, I mean, just kind of like knowing you for the last 30 minutes, I think that almost could be even, not more fulfilling, but fulfilling in a different way, because it's like, not only are you helping people and going and doing your thing, like you know, makes you feel fulfilled, but you're also surrounded with people and serving with people that come from different backgrounds, but also have like a similar, almost like mindset, mission, almost in their head. So it kind of, at least in my opinion, I think that would be really cool, because it almost make me more open to different ideas and more well-rounded and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I made it a point, you know, even going through chaplain school to attend their services, to, you know, speak with them privately about their own beliefs, and to, you know, sit down with a bourbon and a cigar and, you know, have more complex conversations. Yeah. I had the most amazing conversations with the Roman Catholic priests. They shattered a lot of my preconceived notions about what priests were.
Yeah.
And you know, I was happy to have those experiences, and you know, we've stayed in touch over the years.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And obviously, you know, a bourbon and a cigar, you just break down all barriers. That's a great way to do it. Okay. So 2011 to 2015, you're serving. What was the reason, I guess, that you decided to leave the military and then go back to a civilian life?
So, you know, I had alluded to, you know, kind of earlier, I was kind of hitting a place after, you know, 7 or 8 years vocationally, that I was kind of burning out. And the, right, serving in the military was a calling, and but that kind of crept back up, and I was burning out, and I made a decision. So, right, I was having the opportunity to supersede and stay in full time, and right, my wife and I were married, we hadn't had kids yet, and I had this like crisis of contemplation. I started really thinking a lot about my integrity, and I was starting to struggle more with the depression, and wasn't really climbing out of those fogs so well. And I started asking internal questions that matter, which was, you know, can I continue to care for people if I'm not feeling healthy? And I thought about that for a while, and I thought about it, and I discussed it with people that I trusted, and I was trying to think if I could make a career out of, right, helping people. And every way I looked at it, the ultimate answer was no, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I wasn't healthy enough at the time. So I got out of the military. I'm happy to say I honorably served. And my transition started. And I have to say that my transition out of the military was really dark and kind of difficult. You know, it's my own story, it's mine. But I found myself at the tail end of being involved in a decade of service. And I had, at that point, all right, 10 plus years experience. I walked away from lucrative positions in business. And I studied both in my first undergrad degree and my first grad degree, social work and counseling. And I was burnt out on it, and found myself kind of in a dark place, kind of in that transition. And yeah, for anybody that winds up listening to this, you know, that kind of knows that darkness, it gets pretty dark and cold. So I had a kind of angel in disguise creep up on me one day. And I was really contemplating what to do with my life. I felt like I had not wasted, but I felt like I needed to do something very different at the time.
Yeah.
And take care of myself and take care of my wife. So I had a friend from church, that we had done humanitarian work together. We had done sponsored a large team to do work in India, help build some things in Haiti together, Katrina cleanup, all of that jazz.
Right.
We did it all together. And he was a young entrepreneur, and he had a successful business called Altest Instruments. And it was just getting started. And he had about 10 guys, and they were rocking and rolling. And he met me at church one day after church. And again, it's another opportunity where a man that I respect came to me and said, "Hey, listen, I know you're having a hard time. I want to help you. And I don't know what you're going to do," but he kind of asked me directly, "How much did you make, you know, doing what I was doing before?" And I told him,
"Yeah,
yeah, okay, we'll pay you that. Come on, show up on Monday. I'm going to sit you outside my office and we'll find something for you to do." And yeah, that was right. Almost 10 years ago. I was in my transition there, and I'd be ecstatic to tell you that like life just immediately got better.
It's a great comeback story. Yeah.
Right. This is a hindsight judgment after the next decade. Right. Right. It's, I just showed up every day. I laced up my boots. I showed up. I worked hard. Tried to be the best version of myself I could be. And long and short of it is I was given increasing responsibility. I got to the point where I was doing a lot of marketing and technical selling and buying for the company. And I had that kind of fire reignite. You know, I found a purpose for living, which was being in business and entrepreneurism, and then figuring out ways to help people here and through business and through sound moral decisions and good fiscal policy and finding ways to raise the ship and get everybody paid. So I've been serving now. I'm a partner here at Altest. I serve as one of their vice presidents, and happy to say that I have never been happier.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I'm happy for you for that. Do you think, and if this is too aggressive of a question, you can tell me, do you think that coming out of, you know, like you said, like early life, Brian, then into your career basically of service and helping other people, do you think that the darkness that you just described, coming out of the military and basically taking like the last 10 years and like, why the hell did I even do that? You know, I mean, like obviously like there was good that came out of it and you felt like you were making a difference at certain points, but then just consistently felt burnt out. But were you also making sure that you were also kind of like filling your own cup up and the stuff that you were helping with, helping other people with? Because obviously, like you said, you had experienced some of those things over the course of your life. Mm-hmm. And I think, and like, I mean, I have gone through, you know, various things, not the same, different, but everybody's story is different, like you mentioned. But I do think that there's times where you like, you constantly put the focus on other people and not on yourself. So do you think that that was part of the reason why that you kind of like went down that road?
Yeah. Great, great, insightful question again. So short answer is yes. Longer answer is again, hindsight judgment coming back,
sure,
being wise now and understanding like, oh, if you don't take care of yourself, right, in the way you should, or as aggressively as you take care of others, right, you're going to suffer. And that vacillates today, right? You know, even today, we have a staff of 30. Right, I manage a budget that's $10 million plus, and I get just as many opportunities to do everything I did in every other capacity to do that today, but in a business setting, but today, you know, Bill Antes, I got together with him a while ago. He helped kind of set me up with some frameworks of, you know, taking care of yourself. And I do that now and I do it religiously, but that only came through suffering, right? That refinement process of understanding that you can't pour out everything, right? Is something that I've come through the other side of that fire and understand, like, yeah, okay. Today, you know, you have to nurture yourself. You have to talk with people, you know, you have to go to counseling or be involved in support groups or, you know, do the things that are necessary for you to thrive. And as much as you want to grow, is as aggressive as you need to be in killing the defects of the past.
Right. Yeah. Like filling the cup back up. That's right. A big, big important thing for sure. And then I'm assuming, I think you just said it, like these are things that you continue to do to this day, because obviously, like you just mentioned, I don't manage a budget of $10 million, but I would imagine that that would come with its own added stresses. And, you know, managing people and all that kind of stuff, like all those things add stress and, you know, like you said, all this like similar stuff, but just in a different setting than what you were doing before. So I would imagine you're still doing all those things today, right? Because it's like a process. It's a never-ending process, I would imagine.
Yeah, I eat right. You know, the one thing that, you know, that I do a lot more now that I got older is I sleep regularly. Like I go to sleep early. I wake up early, you know, work out every morning, eat right, avoid nonsense. I don't drink. You know,
I got to start avoiding more nonsense. I feel like that sometimes is my problem.
Right.
No way. Too much nonsense.
Nonsense, whether it be social media or whether it be internal, right? It's that rectification and refining process and self-discovery, you know, that I think that when we latch onto that and bettering ourselves, we do see marked and obvious difference over time.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So you're doing Alltest. Did I get that right?
Yeah. So Alltest Instruments.
Alltest Instruments. So you're doing that now. I think you mentioned that you're doing something else as well, right? Is that true?
I have a small business consultancy as well.
Okay.
For startups. So right in the process of my journey, you know, being in business now for larger part of a decade has been you know, just continuing to grow and scale. So I've helped the you know, company that Nathan invited me to, grow from 10 employees to 30. And, you know, we're having a banner year this year. And I wound up, going back, you know, we're talking, seven years ago, did my MBA. So and that was one of those things that when it hit, it felt really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had understood then, you know, my life's purpose. So, at this transition, you know, I'm kind of where I'm at today, in, you know, in business and, you know, continuing to go, we're doing big things. So, Alltest Instruments is a, invention and innovation firm. We help, rebuild, design and test all of those things used in defense applications, consumer electronics, cell phones, cellular systems, anything that goes into space, anything that goes or is attached to or works with one of the American warfighters or friendly nations, anything that is on your cell phone or that navigates or communicates with it, anything Bluetooth, we're involved in all of that invention and innovation ecosystem. So we have a lot of fun there. And then I have Brera, which is my small business consultancy, and we help startups with sales, marketing, general kind of management principles, business strategy, and stuff like that. And we've seen tremendous success there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I would imagine also that the fact that you are making sure that you're practicing filling your cup back up religiously is also helpful, because as I mentioned to you before, when you asked me, what do I do for work? And I rattled off three different things. It's like adding a lot of stuff to your plate, just like you said, adds more stress. So making sure that you're managing that correctly. And all that is definitely key. This may be a hard question to answer. But do you ever kind of like take a moment to reflect on where you are now and knowing kind of like the different, I don't want to say like holes you fell into, but like different moments where you just felt burnt out and felt depressed. Do you ever kind of like look at yourself now and kind of see like almost be like, wow, that's such a crazy path that I've taken from then until now?
Oh, it's quite a story arc. But yeah, I stop often and have tremendous gratitude for my life. You know, everything happens for a reason, and I don't just say that. And then the reality is that regardless of how we think our past kind of turned out and where we are today, you know, your attitude towards the things that have happened in life, right, either self-inflicted or otherwise, dictates your future.
Right.
So my life has gone exactly the way it was supposed to have gone to get me to where I am today. And life is good today. You know?
Yeah.
And a wise man looks at the pitfalls of his life and does not repeat them.
That's very true. For a while I was not a wise man, but,
join the club.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You get it. And then even looking like into the future, are there things that you're like hoping to, is there more things that are coming for Brian, or are there things that you're hoping to accomplish, beyond just what you're doing now, now that you feel like you're in a better place than you were prior?
Yeah.
If they're secret, you don't have to tell secrets.
Nah, no secrets. I'm an open book.
Yeah.
I'm an open book. We're gonna scale, and continue to grow our company. Last year I wrote up a 5-year plan, about what the next 5 years are going to look like. And we're on track. So we're down 12 months. We just completed, that portion of it, and we're doing all right. So we're going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to kind of add and scale to our business. And then my small business consultancy, we just finished up a beta, doing our small business boot camp, and, it's an 8-week program. So we just got done with that, and we'll be kind of launching that more officially, right, along with, you know, the other consultation we've already been doing formally, you know, probably in December. And looking forward to 2023. You know,
yeah.
I put a lot of time into my family. I haven't talked about them, but I have three beautiful little girls, and my wife Caroline that I love very much. And anytime that I'm not working in one of my businesses is spent just building that family structure and being present for all of the precious moments I have.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I love that whole, from start to finish, that whole story. Like you said, it's a pretty interesting story arc, but it just sounds like things are going well, and I hope they continue to go well. So are there places, so the people listening, are there places that you would want them to go to like learn more about the stuff that you have going on that we could put down in the show notes, like about your business, all that kind of stuff about you, if you want to put something like that out there?
Sure. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect with any veteran or any listener. I try to be generous and you know, honestly curious about people. So, could always reach out, or check out either of our two businesses, right, Brero, which is BRERRO.com, and Altest. You know, we're inventing and innovating. That's Altest is ALLTEST.net.
Awesome. All right. So I'll make sure that I put those links and your LinkedIn link down in the show notes for everybody that's listening that does want to connect with Brian or learn more about the businesses that he has going on. Brian, thank you so much for coming on with us for this episode today. This was phenomenal. I'm so appreciative that you came on and shared your story with us. I think this is really important to get a lot of these stories out there that may not always be told all the time. Like, I don't know if you've ever been interviewed about this, but I'm glad that you were able to come on and talk about it a little bit with us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, all in all, I want, you know, young men and women to know that, even when you think it's over, it's not, right. And yeah. that matters, right. Anybody can give up, but you know, that what matters most is pushing through. You know, and I did forget to share, I will briefly about Recalibrate. So, friend of mine, John Roth, Marine, came to me a few years back and said, "Hey, you know, I know you served in the capacity you served. Do you want to do something? Do you want to step into the gap where the VA isn't helping people and stuff like that?" So we started up Recalibrate, and that has been a staple for young people transitioning. So Recalibrate offers peer-to-peer counseling stuff, yoga, free workouts, time to get together and smoke and joke and share with each other and kind of prop each other up. So I did wind up being able to kind of bookend that with helping Johnny to start up Recalibrate be there for people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because honestly, you know, whether we've had people that have served for 12 years, 4 years, less, all that kind of stuff, it and obviously like the transition out is like your experience and the experiences that we've had so far. It's a difficult one, you know, because it's like it's your whole life, you know, it seems like. And I love that you're doing that. So we'll make sure if you could send me like a link or if there's something like that we can put out there for people, we'll make sure that we put that, excuse me, in the show notes as well. So people can go check that out. Again, Brian, thank you so much for coming on with us today. Phenomenal episode. We're going to continue these and hopefully they continue to be as good as they have been. So thank you again.
All right. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Absolutely. So this has been the Greetings from the Garden State podcast. We were here today with Brian Consoli. I'm Mike Cam. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.